The World This Week. I'm Steve Young, CBS News, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. New York City stood eyeball to eyeball with default this week, and default blinked. Canada swallowed hard as Prime Minister Trudeau instituted wage price controls. At the United Nations, Zionism was equated with racism. Moroccans plan to march through and take over Spanish Sahara. George Wallace was waved off by the Pope, and nobody stood between President Ford and a teenager in a Buick. New York City this week came within 1 hour of financial default. Default was finally averted when the New York City Teachers Union permitted $150 million in union pension funds to be used to complete a package so New York could pay off $453 million in notes that had fallen due. Union President Albert Shanker said he let things go down to the wire because he was not anxious to become the White Knight.
I was hoping that someone else would come forward. I was hoping the controller would. I was hoping other pension funds would. I was hoping that the Federal Reserve Board would. This city should have been saved by many other people. It shouldn't be put on our shoulders. But no one else did come forward.
The city now says it will face the prospect of default again within 6 weeks if the federal government does not intervene, and it warns of serious consequences for the entire nation. What would default mean for the city itself? Would there actually be no money for municipal workers? Controller Harrison Golden says the crisis is so novel, no one knows for sure all the consequences of default.
It would have meant that we would have had inadequate money in our till to meet our obligations. That would have included not only debt service, but also would have included payrolls. So that would have been a condition that might have lasted for days and days and potentially even weeks and weeks.
Would the city of New York, in effect, have gone through the same procedure as a corporation declaring bankruptcy, and would the teachers and the sanitation men and all the other creditors have had to sue?
Well, New York couldn't really go through the procedure that corporations can follow because the federal bankruptcy laws don't obtain for municipalities. Chapters 10 and 11, which are available in the private sector, don't apply to a municipal entity which might need their protection. Chapter 9 is inapplicable because of its complexity and because it really wasn't drafted with relevancy to the city of New York, so that there is now no federal statute that would apply to this kind of situation, although I understand that one is being considered in Washington.
Who's to blame? You, the mayor's controller, Mayor Lindsay, who?
I think everybody's to blame.
Appearing before an extraordinary Saturday session of the Senate Banking Committee, New York City Mayor Abraham Beame argued strenuously for federal help.
Would the French disown Paris? Or the British allow London to become insolvent? Would the Soviets abandon Moscow? The world's greatest cities have always been the brightest and the most enduring symbol of their nations.
Well, world capitals watch the unfolding New York situation with some concern and a good degree of puzzlement. The financial editor of the London Sunday Times, Graham Sargent, told us his city has learned to cope with the sort of problem that's dragging New York City down.
You have the special problems of the corporations and the middle classes moving out. We've slightly avoided that problem by increasing the size of the cities to include the suburbs, so that when the people move out, they're still in the city as far as paying their taxes goes.
It has seemed New York's situation a little bit like the perils of Pauline. Following it in London, how has it seemed to you?
Well, it's slightly bizarre.
At the United Nations this week, the General Assembly's Social, Humanitarian, and Cultural Committee approved an Arab resolution condemning Zionism as racist.
I choose my words carefully when I say that this is an obscene act.
Leonard Garment, U.S. Delegate to the United Nations.
The United States protests this act. But protest alone is not enough. In fairness to ourselves, we must also issue a warning. This resolution places the work of the United Nations in jeopardy.
Inflation is placing the world financial framework in jeopardy, and Canada has become the latest country to try to put a lid on things through wage price controls. The freeze proposed by Prime Minister Pierre Elliott Trudeau is almost certain to be approved by the Canadian Parliament. If all goes as planned next week, 350,000 unarmed Moroccans are scheduled to march 20 miles through the desert into Spanish Sahara to claim the country as their own. Morocco's King Hassan called on his countrymen to make the march following a world court decision this week, which said the Spanish Sahara belonged to no one. Spain, which is giving up the country this year and wants Saharans to decide for themselves the future of their country, has called on the UN Security Council to halt the march. The council meets tomorrow on that request. Alabama's Governor George Wallace is on a trip to Europe, newsmen in tow, to show that potential presidential candidate George Wallace has physical stamina and foreign relations savvy. Traveling with Wallace is CBS News correspondent David Dick, who outlines the governor's goals.
A trip to Europe, visits with heads of state, presents the governor as a world figure. The heads of state are seeing him. Reporters and photographers are following along, recording as much as they're allowed to. In his campaign speeches next year, audiences will undoubtedly hear him say, "I have been to Britain," or "been to Belgium, Italy, Germany, France, Scotland. I have seen, I have heard, and I can tell you, inflation is bad over there. NATO should be stronger. The United States should be militarily superior." Next year, questions will persist about the governor's health, and he will say, "I traveled all over Europe, didn't I?" singling out a reporter. "That fellow there was with me. I think he got a little tired on that trip, but I felt fine." The plane the governor has leased for the trip to Europe, it's being leased for the campaign next year, and it's on a practice run. The Secret Service detail and the Alabama State Police are learning to live together, and so it goes. But the Wallace trip, like an out-of-town tryout, will be put to the real test in 76. David Dick, CBS News, Rome.
While in Rome, Wallace requested and the Vatican denied an audience with Pope Paul, who said through a spokesman he was otherwise engaged during the entire 2 days the Alabama governor planned to be in the internal city. Earlier in London, Governor Wallace was asked if he would advocate a closer alliance with the Soviets.
"Yes, I would detente with them, as you say, the French word. They ought to put it so where people can understand what they're talking about. I don't ought to know what detente is, and I don't think the average man..."
"How would you define it, Governor?
Huh?
How would you define detente?" "I define
detente as a highfalutin word. They ought to say get together, you know, a policy of trying to get together and discuss problems so that we might ensure world peace."
George Wallace, willing, he said, to talk face-to-face with the Soviets, but wary because, in his words, they have out-taunted us. 19-year-old James Salamides and the others in his yellow 1968 Buick nearly came face-to-face with Gerald Ford in the Hartford, Connecticut intersection of Market and Talcott Streets this week. The Buick struck the president's limousine broadside as Mr. Ford, having completed a political appearance, was speeding toward the airport and then went through a red light. Hartford police said later it was their fault for not closing the intersection until the limousine passed, although the White House has demanded an explanation from the Secret Service. Heavy armor on the president's car prevented serious injury to its passengers, and later in the week, the president telephoned the Connecticut teenager.
"I just wanted to call you, Jim, and first, of course, ask how you're feeling. I understand you weren't hurt, but I'd like to hear it from you personally."
I'm not hurt, but I'm pretty nervous."
"Well, you shouldn't be nervous. Secondly, let me ask you, were any of the other young people in the car with you hurt at all?"
No, Mr. President."
"Well, that's also darn good news."
Glad you're feeling well yourself."
"I feel fine.
A little shaken."
"Well, it was kind of a jolt, but
yeah.
There was no body bruise or any shaking of any of the old bone."
It's a car crash James Salamides will not soon forget. And that's The World This Week, produced by Harry Poloshin. I'm Steve Young, CBS News.